Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the wonderful Golding Accountancy. We are golding.com. Hello. As you may have guessed, I'm not very well. My wonderful womb is giving me jip again. So I'm going to keep this short and sweet. Despite myself. Oh, I had some good news this week. I am actually 5'4". For years I thought I was 5'4". But then a couple of years ago I felt like I was shrinking. And then I got measured again and was told I was actually 5'3.5". But then, weirdly, the other night, I was in the kitchen cleaning something on the side, and I thought, I'm definitely getting shorter. So I got measured again, but I am actually 5'4". I think I'm just losing my mind. Anyway, this week, the wonderful Kate McGann joined me to talk all about everything. We spoke about her career, periods, and the joys of being a stand-up comedian. And woman. And a lovely wedding to the lovely Rich Wilson, which you've got to check out her photos and his photos. It just looked like the most dreamy day. But anyway, here is the wonderful Kate.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Work.
I've got eczema. Oh no. So I look like Michael Jackson. And I've got endometriosis. I'm waiting to have a hysterectomy.
Oh no.
And I woke up yesterday morning. I just get really bad pain. And it's not all the time. It's just sometimes. But I woke up yesterday morning and it's just been really bad. So this is why I'm not dressed. So I'm very sorry. Normally I would be dressed. But I didn't think you'd mind too much.
I'm actually wearing my pyjamas from the waist down, so I totally understand.
Oh, I love that.
And I'm on day two of the time of the month, so I know exactly how you... yeah. I mean, yesterday I was like hot water bottle, chocolate, feeling really sorry for myself. And I'm also full of cold. So we're...
Oh, no. You got the dredges. We had coughing. That. Oh, that's all right. Don't worry. We had that, oh, I don't know, a week, maybe 2 weeks ago. But it's just so weird, isn't it? It's like as soon as it gets to September, everyone just gets sick. And it's like the weather hadn't even really changed that much, but it just fascinates me the way it's just like clockwork, isn't it? As soon as summer ends, that's it.
Well, my mum swears by echinacea. She's like, I haven't had a cold in years because I have echinacea. So I've been taking it. And I messaged her going, well, that didn't work. I'm full of cold.
I think it's like a preventative thing rather than a cure, though. So I think you have to kind of just have it before.
Yeah, no, I've been taking it for ages.
And you have?
Yeah. And it's like, well, that didn't help. I still got it. But then I'm working in an office at the moment, so I'm surrounded by lots of people that are coughing and spluttering. So,
Do you have to commute in? Are you in? Because you're in Brighton, right?
Yeah, I'm in Brighton, so I'm just working in Portslade. I'm working for a prop makers at the moment, which is really exciting.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I bet that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's good.
Do they
make
all kinds of stuff?
Yeah, they make loads of stuff. So they make the costumes for The Masked Singer. So, so that's what I've been working on, is The Masked Singer.
Yeah,
it's really cool. So they make these amazing costumes and massive props. And basically their sort of tagline is, if you imagine it, we'll make it. And whatever people come up. So they've made big cocktail glasses and massive, you know, those like champagne fountains and things. So they've made like huge ones of those. They worked with the Mr. Bean thing recently. And they're called Plunge Creations. They're amazing.
Okay. That must be such a nice environment to work in. Just constantly a new thing every day and like really having to use your imagination and stuff to think of what you're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not artistic in any way. I'm just like, my best friend Saffron is a project manager there. And I was like, when I got back from Edinburgh, she was going on holiday and I took her to the airport and I said, I really need money like now. Because I'm getting married in 3 weeks and I need some money to pay for things. I've just sort of forgot that I was getting married. And so I said to Saffron, I was like, I really need some like money fast. And she said, well, we need some help at work at the Masked Singer. And I was like, yay. So I applied and then got the job. So I'm just freelancing there at the moment. It's great.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, it's really good.
Are you from Brighton?
Yeah. So I grew up here. I've lived in London for a long time and I lived in Australia. So, I came back 2015 and then, I just wouldn't want to live in London again. I sort of did that. It's a bit much.
My sister went to university in Brighton and she never came back. So we go to Brighton quite a lot. Obviously, I've got three nieces that have kind of grown up there and it's like... Not home from home. I love Brighton, but I'm always cold in Brighton.
Yeah, it is quite cold.
I think it's because of the sea. But it is beautiful. Very windy. Brighton.
Yeah, it's great. And it's funny because I went to Berlin for my friend's hen do recently, like at the beginning of the year. And I randomly bumped into a girl that I went to school with. And she's like, where are you? Like, where are you living now? Because she lives in Berlin. And I went, I'm back in Brighton. And she's like, really? And what's funny is that she's a DJ. She's quite a well-known DJ. And when she comes back to Brighton, she goes to the same clubs. It's the same people. It's the same sort of circle of friends that she hangs out with. And she's like, oh, Brighton's just the same. But since when I moved back from Australia, I didn't have any friends here. So I've all my friends now I've become friends with in the last like 8 years.
Yeah.
So it's like newish, but they're all friends from comedy and I do acting as well and from different work. And because I've just been like temping and doing some, you know, odds and sods of job. Well, I had a really good job. I used to work for Comic-Con. So I've got friends from, you know, jobs and stuff. Yeah, I know. It's really cool.
Wow. What did you do for them?
I was the talent coordinator, so I looked after all the celebrities. Yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, wow. Who's the most exciting person that you looked after for you?
For me, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a nice, nice chap. And I met Jason Momoa, but I wasn't really like allowed to, apart from saying hello and introducing myself and then sort of trying not to climb him.
Is he as good looking in real life?
Oh, he's gorgeous. Yeah, he's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
So really tall. And just everything that you thought he was going to be, that's what he, you're like,
well,
yeah.
That's really nice, isn't it? Because sometimes when you meet celebrities, it's a bit of a disappointment, isn't it?
Yes.
I think sometimes it's better massively. Not to meet your heroes, you know, and they're always only really little as well. And you're like, oh.
I know. Tall. They're always quite tiny because I'm 5 foot 10. So everyone's a bit small to me. but yeah, they it's quite funny though, because I thought, you know, that being with working with celebrities and stuff, they'll be sort of drama queens, they'll be really difficult. And actually, I found the more famous they are, the less difficult they were. But like the sort of lower levels were of fame, they're harder, they were.
Yeah.
They're really stropping. Yep. You're like, although I'm very good friends with the pink and yellow Power Rangers. We follow each other on Instagram. Yeah. So I'm like,
oh, wow. I'm friends
with them. Yeah, so that's cool. But unfortunately, because of COVID, I got made redundant. So, lost that job. But yeah, so I love living in Brighton.
I want to talk to you about lots of things. I would like to start with your wedding, if that's okay, because I love a wedding and it's very recent, isn't it?
Yes, it was 3 weeks ago.
Did you have the best day ever?
It was the best. Yeah, it was the best day. So I'm, because I used to work in events, you know, with Comic-Con, and since leaving that job, I've been freelancing for events. And I'm just like, the way I'm really good at organizing and the way my brain works is like, right, we're going to do a list. We're going to do this. And Rich and I have got very similar tastes. So everything I said, I was like, how about doing this theme? Or how about not a theme, but, you know, like, how about, we had different ideas, what we wanted. Yeah. And then everything we just agreed on perfectly. And I, you know, I had my Pinterest boards and I was like, oh, I quite like that. And so I was picking and choosing everything. And we sort of had a tiki bar 1950s theme. And so we had loads of like really bright colours and everything was just really fun. And we had a double decker bus, which took us from the ceremony to the reception. And we just hired a pub, like we just hired the whole pub and we just had the best time. And everyone that came had the best time. And yeah, it was just amazing. Really fun. Oh, thank you.
Beautiful. Where did you get your dress from?
It's from Dig for Victory, which is in Brighton, and they specialise in vintage sort of replicas, and it was a bespoke dress that they made to measure, and judging that it was like made perfectly for me, I could pick what it looked like, what lace, what every element of it I picked, and it was only including like all the extras and the fittings, it was under £600. So it was a bargain. So yeah, all these people that are spending thousands.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was made for me, like from scratch. It's
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it was under £2,000. I'd be like,
oh. Nice. £600.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I thought it was a vintage dress.
No. And then I had a pink petticoat underneath, which was gorgeous.
It was lovely.
So yeah.
And you're married to the lovely Rich Wilson, who I've had on here before as well, who's the nicest guy.
He's the best. Yeah.
How long have you been together?
We've been together since last September. We got together. So yeah, just over a year.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And are you going on honeymoon? Have you gone on honeymoon?
No, because we're both really busy with work and gigs and stuff. So we will be going away hopefully in January.
Yes.
He's just there. Do you want to come and say hello, Richard? Do your flies out first.
Hello.
Hello. You all right, love?
Yeah, I'm making him go to the shops. But yeah, we had such a good wedding and it was great. And
yeah, it looked
lovely. Where we met, We met at a gig last summer, and then I slid into his DMs. And it was my intention was to just sort of pick his brains about comedy, because I'm still fairly new. I've only been going for about 5 years. But then with the pandemic and stuff, like I've been very sort of half-hearted about it. And then I've only sort of started again after the pandemic, really. So I kind of wanted to pick his brains about comedy and, you know, sort of just a bit of insider information, really. So I sort of messaged him and said, you know, I see you've got a gig in Brighton. Do you fancy going for a pint beforehand? And then we ended up falling in love then and there.
So it was it instant? You just kind of had a connection and it was just like, I just know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I fancied him before, like, I met him. Like, I knew of him, but we'd never actually met in real life. And so when we met, I was like, God, I remember looking at him performing and thinking, fuck, I fancy you. And that was sort of last summer. And then at the end of September, I said, you know, do you want to go for a drink? And we went to a pub called The Wick in Brighton. And I've got tattoos on my arms, like, so I've got like a few little tats. And he was like looking at them. And as he took my hand, we went, oh, like, it was literally like lightning. And we both went, oh, that's hi, hello, friend. And then he said, when I had to go to rehearsals, so he went off to his gig. And you know when you're like 2 pints drunk and you're a bit like giddy? And I had my bike opposite the pub. And as I was undoing it, I gave there was a homeless guy sitting outside Tesco's, and I gave him some money and I was chatting away to him. And then Rich was watching me from the pub across the road. And he was like, that's when I knew, like, you were the one. It's like, as soon as you started talking to that chap on the street. And I was like, well, I just talk to everyone. Like, it's just, that's what I'm like. And then I remember going to rehearsals because I was in a play. And I was just on cloud nine. I just remember being like, I think I've just met the guy I'm going to marry. Like, I absolutely fell head over heels.
Oh, then that's so lovely. Yeah. Oh, I'm really happy for you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been single for like... Sorry?
You don't hear that much, like, when people meet and it's a genuine instant connection. Like, you do hear of it, but it's rare. So it's really lovely.
Well, I thought it was, like, something that they get, you know, like a movie thing. And I was like, well, I don't believe in that, you know. But it was just that sort of moment where we kind of held our hands and went, oh... And then I sort of casually dropped in that I fancied him. And he was like, what? Like, he was completely baffled. Like, what do you mean? And then, we went on a few dates, but we wasn't like, we didn't have loads and loads and loads of dates. Like, I've dated people before where it's burnt really bright and really quick. And then it's sort of, you know, a few weeks later or a month later, it's kind of gone.
Yeah.
That sort of first excitement just went. And so I was really worried that was the same situation. I thought, oh, maybe like this will just, I hope it doesn't fizzle out. But we were quite sensible. You know, we didn't see each other all the time. We were both really busy. So we saw each other, like, had a date like once a week. And we just kept it sort of on the DL. We didn't really want to go public with it. We didn't really want to... because it was mainly me that said that, because every time I've sort of said, oh, this is my new boyfriend, you know, on Instagram or whatever, like, inevitably we split up like 2 days later. Like, I've only done it a couple of times before, and then I've just thought, no, I'm not going to do it. And it was quite nice because, you know, obviously we're both comedians, and it was nice to keep our private life private and our work life, you know, work for work, because we use Instagram and stuff for comedy promotion and stuff. So it was quite nice. And then when we got married, we just went, oh yeah, by the way, this happened. Yeah. Which was great. And it was good fun. But yeah, I've been single more than I've been in a relationship. Yeah. So I was like the eternal singleton. Yeah. And then I met Rich and I was just like, I'm done. That's it.
Oh, it gives me, because I'm the same. I've only had like a couple of relationships. Mm. And I've been separated now from the girl's dad for 7-8 years. But it's nice to know that it does it, because I've been a bit like, oh, it's all a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
It's nice to know that it can happen. Yeah. But so tell me about, so when you were younger, have you always, because obviously you said you act as well, so have you always kind of been into performing and...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my mum said I've been performing since I was like, since I could crawl, you know. My dad used to own a haulage business. So we used to go to where all the trucks were, the truck stop. And there was like a pallet there, I used to stand on top of it and perform for all the drivers, you know, being like, ah, you know. And my mum was like, brilliant, you just always had it in you.
Yeah.
And maybe that just makes me a big old show off, but I love acting. I've always wanted to be an actress, and I've just never done anything that's sort of more professional, unfortunately. I've done loads of like Amdram, I've done loads of plays, I've got a degree in theatre studies.
Where did you go?
I went to Northbrook, which is just outside Brighton, so it's in West Sussex. And I wanted to go to drama school, but I stupidly applied for like the most difficult ones to get into. And after I applied for 3 years in a row and didn't get in, I applied for RADA, Lambda and Bristol Old Vic.
Yeah.
Which are like notoriously the hardest. And funnily enough, I read Daisy May Cooper's book recently, and she went to RADA the same time that I would have been auditioning for it. And I was like, lots of people say we look similar as well. So I thought,
That's why.
So she went to RADA, but yeah, it's just quite hard to get into. So I ended up going to university instead. Yeah, so competitive,
incredibly competitive. And also, I did drama at university, but then when I finished my drama degree, it was like, well, you need to go to drama school. Like, your degree doesn't really mean anything. If you really want to make it, you got to go to drama school. And I did have coaching for a while off someone who'd been to Bristol Old Vic.
Oh, really?
Like, that's sweet. Oh God, it's my doorbell. Sorry. Yeah. So he, I was getting trained, but I was like, the more he kind of spoke about it, I just thought, I was so not confident. Like, I really wasn't when I was younger. I've only really been confident since I've been 40.
Yeah.
And had kids, and now I don't give a fuck. But before, I was really self-conscious, and I just thought, there's no way in the world I can put myself in that kind of position with all those really talented people. I mean, not that I probably ever would have got in anyway, but I was like, this isn't for me. But it is, I think you're continuously told about how hard it is and how many people go for such few places, and how like 90% of actors are out of work 90% of the time, or, you know, whatever the statistic is. And it is a bit like, unless you really, really, really want it and are really super driven, and also potentially have the financial support of parents or a partner or whoever who can let you not work as much so you can audition all the time. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into it. So it is bloody hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, like, I always found... I was quite self-conscious at when I was younger, and I never sort of felt like I threw myself in. Like, I'm 36 now, and I think if I like auditioned for drama 15. School now, oh my God,
you look so young.
But I thought if I auditioned now for drama school, I'd get in, because I've lost that sort of inhibition, and I just don't care as much. Whereas when I was younger, I was very conscious. I've always been a bit bigger as well. I've not been like the skinniest person, and I mean, I wasn't ginormous. I mean, I would do anything to be, when I thought I was ginormous, I was probably like a size 12, you know. But you just think, you get sort of really in your head about it. And I wanted to go to one of these three schools desperately. And then, like, when I didn't get in, it was just absolutely heartbreaking. But now I think if I auditioned, I just wouldn't care as much. And then I'd probably get in. But I mean, in hindsight, I wish I'd applied for like East 15 or Guildhall, or do you know what I mean? Like one that wasn't the elite ones. Maybe one that was a bit more kind of, I mean, East 15 is like very method, but that would scare the shit out of me. But one of the other schools, like, I think I should have.
But then I But the thing is, it's never too late. You could always do it now, or in a couple of years, or whatever. But also, it's the what happens. It takes you down the route, doesn't it? Like, I always think, whatever I've done in my life, I've now got my two children, and if I hadn't done exactly what I'd done, I wouldn't be. Do you know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Like, if you'd have got in, you might not have started doing comedy or.
No, or met Rich. Or
oh,
again. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I remember I did 2 years at Northbrook. So I did the foundation degree. And then the idea was that I was going to go to drama school. And my dad said to me, I was 18, 19. So it was like I'd done 2 years. And then he said, if you stay on to do the third year, so if I got my degree, he was going to buy me a round the world ticket. And he was going to pay for me to travel around the world. And I was like, so, because I was so stubborn, I was so determined. I was like, no, because if I do my degree, I have to pay to go to drama school because I can't get any funding to do the 3 years at drama school.
Oh,
so,
why? Because you'd be too old, or you just because you've
got
a degree?
No, just because I've got a degree. Yeah, because it's basically like another BA. So yeah, you don't get any student finance. So I was like, well, I can't get any loans and I can't pay for it. I have to pay for it out of student loans. And I didn't have any sort of financial backing because I'm from a single parent family. And my dad lived in France and he basically tried to bribe me to stay to do my degree. And I was like, no, I'm all right. So, I didn't. And I was like, damn it, but to be honest, like, I bet if I called my dad's bluff and went, I'll stay on, he'd be like, oh no, I didn't actually mean around the world. I meant like a trip to Tenerife.
So what did you do then? So you didn't finish your degree, or did you finish it? Did you
So I moved to London and I sort of fannied around in London for a bit. And then like 2 or 3 years later, I went back to finish the final year. So I went back to the same college because I was living in Brighton. So I did get my degree eventually. And then I called my dad up and I said, I've done it now. Can I get that round the world ticket? And he's like, oh, I don't remember saying that. And I was like, oh, gee. Conveniently. My dad, like growing up, because my mum and dad split up when I was really young. And growing up, my dad did have a penchant for saying things and then weirdly forgetting about them when I sort of brought him up on them. So, yes, unfortunately, I had lots of.
When did he move
promises.
To France?
When I was 10.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, so he was there for quite a long time then?
Yeah, he still lives there now. So, he's married to a French woman. And so Annie's been around since I was like 5. Yeah.
Okay.
But mum and dad's.
Do you have siblings?
Yes, I've got an older brother.
Okay.
So, yes, I don't see as much as I'd like to see, but he lives just up the road in Hayward Heath.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's just moved down here, so that's nice to have him a bit nearer, and his wife Shana as well. So we get on really well. So he's lovely.
So what led you to comedy? Had you always kind of had a interest in it?
I've always enjoyed making people laugh. Like whenever I do plays and stuff, like whatever I've done, I've just always gravitated towards the funny plays and the funny roles. Like I just feel more comfortable in the humorous roles. I was always the class clown at school. And then about 10 years ago, my friend Gary and his twin brother, Alan, who are my best friends, they said, we've got a Groupon to do a comedy course. do you, but Alan couldn't do it. So Gary was like, do you want to do it with me? And I was like, yeah, right then. It was like 2-day comedy course, like learning basic stand-up. And at the end, you did like a 3-minute or 5-minute set that you'd written. And it was terrible. And I remember like it was so bad. Like it's triggering how bad it was.
Was it like, so do you watch It's Always Sunny?
Yeah.
Like when she did the acting class with the, I was just screaming the kids.
It's so bad. Like, you know, when you think this is comedy, this is stand up.
Yeah.
So it was at Dirty Dick's in Liverpool Street.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah. So everyone came to watch like our graduation and watch this 3 minutes of like terrible material. And then I did like a few gigs, like probably 5 gigs. And I started a night. I used to work in a pub in North London. So I started a night and I had other people host it. I emceed it once or twice and it was bad. It was really bad. And I didn't really know about stand-up and like I didn't really get it. And then I started dating someone and he didn't like... I sent him a video. I sent him a YouTube video of me performing at Up the Creek. And I'm like, my jokes... I've got quite a dirty sense of humour. So I really like cock jokes and I love like talking about sex and... just like sort of dating stories and things that happen to me. And I'm still like that and I find it enjoyable. So I dated this chap and he said to me, I can't believe you sent that to me. Like, that's disgusting. And it just made me feel really like insecure. And I was like, well, I wrote that material before we even knew each other existed. And I basically like deleted all my YouTube video. I had like 2 on there and I deleted them and I went, I'm not going to perform and no, it's fine. Like, I don't want to do. Yeah. So I kind of, it totally took my confidence. And then he sort of backtracked and said, oh, I didn't mean like you didn't have to delete them. You didn't have to stop doing it. And I was like, well, it's fine. I just won't. Cause I felt really like bad about it. So then I stopped altogether. And then weirdly me and that chap split up because he was a controlling
knob.
A narcissist. And then I moved to Australia and I watched loads of stand up and I was just like, I just love it. It was the Melbourne Comedy Festival when I was there and I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, I love this so much. So when I moved back, I was in a play in Brighton and my friend Sarah, who was in the play with me, said, you're really funny. You should do stand up. And I was like, well, I've sort of dabbled before, but I don't really count it. And then I started up again. So that was 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I sort of count it from then, really.
Yeah.
So I don't really count the before times.
What took you to Australia?
Well, I'd always wanted to live in Australia. And I've always been drawn to it as just somewhere that I really wanted to visit. And I was 27 and I just thought, if I don't go now... I'll never go. And I was made redundant.
You have to go, you can get a visa before you're 30. Before you're,
so they're quite strict.
It's all over.
If you're over 30, you're screwed. Yeah. And I remember saying to this guy, well, I just, because he was talking about like marriage and babies and stuff, and he was 9 years older than me. And I said, well, I want to live in Australia at least once in my life. And he was like, oh, no, I've got no interest in going there. That's a horrible place. And I was like, so all these like red flags are coming up. And I was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be together. So we had a really horrible breakup and it really upset me. And so I just literally, I was made redundant at the same time. I lost my job and they gave me some money, obviously, from the redundancy. So I literally went into the STA travel and said, hi, I'd like a flight to Sydney, please. And they were like, what? Like, what do you mean? So I went. Yeah, so I went in for a year.
How long did you go for? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you love it?
I loved it. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I loved every minute. But it's kind of weird because I was working, in a corporate environment and I was working for a film company And I basically took my life out of London and dropped it back in Sydney. So I just like went straight into a 9 to 5. I was just temping. I got a flat. I lived with two people. Yeah, it was just... So I didn't really do like the backpacking thing. I didn't really do the traveling thing. I lived and worked there for a year. But yeah, it was good. I did a bit of traveling towards the end.
Yeah. But it's good that you went and did it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like you got it out of your system and, you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'd love to go back. I'd love to do the Melbourne Comedy Festival and Adelaide and Perth and... Yeah, I'd love
do
to.
Do it.
Yeah.
So does how, it win the lottery? Decided... Oh, yeah. Oh, God. How was Edinburgh with... How do people afford to do it? Because I never really thought... I mean, I've always wanted to go. I've never gone. But I was just like, when I have wanted to go, I'm like, I can't fucking afford the train, let alone staying anywhere. But then I had Jordan Gray on, and she was telling me about how expensive it is to do it, which I hadn't even really thought about. And then this year, everything had got... even more crazy expensive.
Yeah.
How is anyone supposed to do it?
I was really lucky because Rich and I, well, my friend who I used to work with at Comic-Con, she's from Edinburgh. And when I did So You Think You're Funny in 2019, I got through to the semi-final. So I had to go to Edinburgh. And I was sort of looking at places when I was at work. I was like looking at places to stay. And she was like, you know, I'm from Edinburgh, right? You know, you can stay with my family or my friends. And I was like, oh, do you think that'd be okay? She's like, yeah, absolutely. Stay with my friend Sandra. So I got through to I did the semi-final and won and then got through to the final. So I stayed with her friend Sandra. And she was like, yeah, of course I'll put you up. And then obviously we had the pandemic. And then I messaged her and said, any chance that you could put me up for a month if I do the Edinburgh run? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. You're a mate. Like, I'd love to have you come and stay. And then Rich, when I told him, I was like, oh, I've got free accommodation in Edinburgh. And he was like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, it's like the holy grail of my God, free accommodation. So Rich and I both stayed with our lovely friends Sandra and Ronald, and we got to stay for free, but we were paying for our flat in Brighton. So we still paid rent, but we just went here for a month. It's just really expensive. Yeah. I mean, I didn't do a show this year. I just did a few spots. But I was like helping my friend Flyer and helping Rich with his tech. And so I was still... Yeah. Sort of going around with Rich and kind of doing all the spots that he was doing, but like just supporting him. And I went to see loads of shows as well, which was great. But it massively sort of brought up loads of insecurities because I was thinking, oh God, I don't know if I'm ever good enough to do a show here. And, you know, you see all the posters with the 5 stars and 3, you know, aren't they amazing? And aren't they fabulous? Go and see this person. And it just made me feel like, oh God, I don't know if I'm ever good enough to do this.
But don't listen to the... You watch RuPaul.
Yes.
You know about this. What is it? The inner critic. Is that what he calls it? What does he call it? That saboteur.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was hard.
Switch it off. Just because if you're doing it, aren't you? You are doing it. So why aren't you good enough to... Of course you're good enough.
It's just the price of it is very expensive.
So when you decided to try comedy again, how did you do it? How does one become stand-up?
Well, I just started like back in Brighton and I started, just doing like open mics and doing 5 minutes. And we're lucky in Brighton. Like Brighton is like rats for London. Like there's a comedian every like meter, you know, every square foot there's like a new comedian. So they're rife. So I just did like loads of open mics and new material nights and just started up very slowly. And Then I just got bigger and bigger, like better and better, and just got further along and started doing longer sets and then traveling a bit further afield and just applying for things and meeting comedians, and they would see me and go, oh yeah, I've got a gig that you could do, you know, and then that's how you sort of network. But I'm still like massively unknown. Like no one knows who I am. Like when I turn up to gigs and I'm like, oh, I'm out of my depth here. Like these are proper famous comedians. And I'm just like, hello, I'm Kate McGann. but I'm not very good at this sort of self-promotion. You know, when people are really good at like bigging themselves up, being like, oh, I'm amazing, I smashed this. I'm so shit at it.
Yeah.
Like, but that's why I think I didn't really do well at auditions and stuff. You know, like bigger group auditions at a drama school. Because you've got those people that push themselves to the front and they're like, you need to see me. I'm amazing. I'm fantastic. This is why I need to be in your show or whatever. And I'd just be like, hello.
Yeah.
Like I'm confident. Yeah. I'm confident, but that whole kind of pushing your way to the front.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't have drive. It's not that I don't want it, but I'm also like, oh, for God's sake, it just, I would rather just stand back.
See, I completely get that. And I do think that sometimes people that aren't necessarily very good get further just because they've got more, do you know what I mean?
Balls. Yeah.
But I do also think that you don't have to be like that too. Get somewhere. I think if you're good, then your talent will, you know, speak for itself. But I completely understand that because I'm not like that, and I just always think, oh, fuck off, like with the, and I find it, I'd be really embarrassed to do that.
Yeah.
But then also sometimes it is, maybe you have to just play the part a bit.
Yeah, and blow, you know, be proud of it and blow your own trumpet and stuff. I mean, I am getting more and more gigs. Like I did the boat show, New Material Night, and this was back in March, and the one of the agents was like, oh my God, where have you been? You're amazing. Signed me to Blue Book, and I was so excited, and they didn't announce me for ages. And basically, it was like 4 months where I didn't hear anything. Well, Helena kept sort of changing the dates and saying, oh, no, I can't meet up this week and I'm going on holiday. And, oh, it's the Queen's Jubilee, so I can't see then. And it's this holiday. And, oh, because of the bank holiday. And because I'm not pushy, and I was like, Rich was so funny. He was like, you should say something. You should kick off. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not the sort of person that would kick off.
Yeah.
Because that's not me. Like, that's not what I'm like. So I just went, no, I'm sure she's got a very good reason, like it's not a problem, I'm sure there's a reason they haven't announced me. And then it turned out that Helena was actually leaving the company, and then she was trying to get, you know, her roster, the other agents, to kind of take on her roster. Unfortunately, they couldn't, so everyone that she had working for her has had to go and find new agents, but they're all in a position where they're well enough known that if they go, oh, I'm looking for a new agent, they'll get snapped up. Whereas I'm like brand new and the other agents don't know me. So I'm on the lookout for an agent at the moment. But so many people have said to me, they're not the be all and end all of, don't worry about it. Like, do it yourself for a bit. So, yeah, there is that. And I just want to do, you know, the fringes, do as many sort of fringe festivals as I can. And I've got a, you know, 45 minute show, which is, I've got an hour, but it's sort of a tenuous hour. Like it's a loose hour.
Is Edinburgh an hour? Or could you do 45 minutes?
Yeah, you could do 45 minutes. Yeah. I mean, if I debuted, you know, it's like a big deal, then it's an hour. But I would want to, so many people debuted this year and did their first hour. So I wouldn't want to do it, you know, when there's a lot of competition. So that's why I didn't want to do it. But I would want to, I'm not in a rush to do my first hour. I think I'd rather wait, get it shit hot and super tight, know it inside out and try it in loads of different places and then do it.
But then that will give you more confidence as well. And maybe you will be a lot more pushy and be able to pick yourself up. Because it is just doing it, isn't it? You just have to keep telling yourself how amazing you are constantly. Even if you don't really believe it, you just have to keep doing it anyway. And then you do. Eventually it does sink in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in like affirmations and sort of, you know, your thoughts become things. And I mean, because I'm not very well at the moment and, you know, I'm on my period and I'm just like, oh, I'm sad. So it's really hard to like go, I'm an amazing woman when, you know, all I want to do is eat ice cream and watch RuPaul's Drag Race. So when, you know, next week when I feel like when my estrogen levels are rising, I'll be like,
but
yeah.
But you know what? I think that that's fine because I'm a lot, when I'm very hormonal and with all my gynecological issues and everything, I think it's even worse. And I'm definitely perimenopausal.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I'm very much active on social media because I have to obviously promote the podcast. I've started a business with my friend. We've got to promote that. Like there's loads of stuff going on, but when I'm in the mood to, then that's fine. But other times I just want to hide away and I've stopped beating myself up for that because like you can't be on all the time. You just can't be. And I think it's got to be organic and you need time to rest and you might think of something really good to do while you're resting. Whereas if you were just constantly thinking, oh God, I've got to post something or I've got to do this, I've got to do this. Do you know what I mean? It just makes you feel like you don't want to do
anything. Keep going, keep going. Absolutely. A few years ago, I saw a show at the Brighton Fringe and it was by Lucy Peach, who is a period preacher. And she talks about the different stages of your cycle.
Yeah.
But she explains it because I've obviously looked into it before, but never really got it because it's a lot of like jargon and they talk about the follicular and the luteal. And I'm like, hang on, what? Who?
What?
Yeah. It's very confusing. And then she explains it in such a beautiful way. And her husband's on stage and is sort of live annotates it. So he draws these pictures on the iPad, which is projected behind her. And then she also sings songs with it. So it just goes in and she does like online courses where she takes you through your different stages. And there's a book called Period Queen and I highly recommend it to anyone. You can get it on Amazon, you can get it anywhere.
I've got to add it to my basket.
Yes, do. And it explains the different stages and what you need at that. So it's four different stages and she breaks them up in dream, which is from day one to day five, do, which is like when your estrogen levels are rising and you get a bit of testosterone in there. So it's like, you need to like get all your stuff done and you're like superwoman. And then give, where you sort of have, you give loads of, you've got loads of progesterone and you surround yourself with friends and family and you're in a really giving stage. And then take, which is your premenstrual stage, where you're just like, and that's actually the best time to be creative because just channel it into something. And so basically it's like life hacking your period, life hacking your cycle. So it's amazing. Like since reading that book, I've told Rich about it and he's like, oh, what day are you on now? And so he can like understand like where I am and he'll even say to me, he's like, oh, are you in your take phase? I'm like, yeah, I'm in my fucking shut up. I love you, darling, but shut up.
Yeah.
So it's been learning. I wish I had this at school. We need to educate our boys as well, like need to
100%
know about this. And obviously not everyone that has a period identifies as a woman, and it's not just for women. Yep. And we've got so many different things that we need to look at. I mean, you said at the beginning you have endometriosis.
That's
so hard. to deal with.
And no one fucking talks about it.
No
and
one
I think
talks
I've
about
probably
it.
Had it forever. I think this has been my problem, because I've always suffered with my periods. I've always had problems. And I think that I've probably had it the whole time. But it was just never really looked into, because you're just taught that periods are painful.
Yeah.
And you just have to put up with it. It's just one of those things that you have to put up with. And I think about the amount of pain that I used to be in, and that I know friends. My friend Lois, she's 27. And she's like, she bleeds. They're really irregular. They're really heavy. She has to spend time in bed. And I'm like, you need to be, there's something wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, but she's just taking it as, this is what my periods are like. So you just put up with it. And I'm like, it's enabling your life. Like, no. That's not the right word. My brain doesn't work anymore. This is the menopause. The fucking word. But it just stops her from living. Do you know what I mean?
And it's like, yeah, it's I can't use the word now. Yeah.
You know what I mean.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, it's just, and there's something definitely wrong. But then I also do think about, like, why is it? Because surely, why is it so hard? If this, well, obviously we have periods, we have cycles, so we can give birth to the next generation. So why is it so shit?
I think if men had periods, if men had periods, they would have a cure. They would have so much like healthcare in place. It would be, I mean,
you'd have
the amount of money.
Week off work every month.
Oh, absolutely. You'd have a week off. I mean, even if we had a day, like day one and day two are the worst for me, like absolute worst. I feel like shit. I mean, I'm a hot water bottle. I'm dosed up to the eyeballs. And then luckily, like day 3 to 5, I'm kind of on the other side of it. But those first 2 days, I mean, if you could have an option to have the day off, or, I mean, to sit at work and be like, like in pain, it's just the worst. I mean, I used to take a hot water bottle into work and sit at my desk with it because I'd feel so ill. But the amount of money that's been spent on Viagra treatments and for men's health, and it's just like, if you could just put that into endometriosis, like, you know, they need to look into it. It's
like, it's when unbelievable. When I was in the hospital, like I've been in and out of hospital, and the gynecologists just don't have any answers. And I was just like, why does it hurt so much? Like, what is the reason for the pain? What's the end goal for the, you know, because it'll just come out of nowhere. Like, my pain started yesterday. I finished my period at the start of the week. So I'm not ovulating and it's not period pain. Do you know what I mean? So what is the pain? What is the point of it? But no one can, and it will just be completely random. Sometimes it is because I'm ovulating, or sometimes it is because I'm just about to get my period, or I'm having my period. Yeah. But when it's like this, I'm like, why does it hurt?
Yeah,
but then
bad.
No one knows.
It's so, anything. I mean, it's so upsetting. And like, I remember my mum, she had started hers when she was 11. So she was really young when her started. So. And then she always had, I think she had endometriosis, but because she was, you know, she's 68 now. 60, she might kill me. 67 now. hang on a minute. Yeah. So she just used to have the worst period pains where she would pass out from the pain. And, you know, and in the, obviously, I was going to say, the olden days, you'd have, like, that loop around your waist, and then you'd have, like, two hooks either on the front and the back with a great big sanitary towel in the middle. And she's like, can you imagine trying to do PE in, you know, this was back in the 60s. And it was just, my mum said, I remember being mortified. Yeah. You know, it was like that she had to wear this nappy, essentially. And you just had to sort of get on with it. And she used to pass out from the pain. So I remember my mum talking about it, and when I was younger, and her having a period, and it being this awful time of the month. And horrendous. And so when I got mine, when I was like 13, I just remember being like, oh no,
yeah,
this is going to happen to me now. And I was really like, I was really lucky. Like I've got very regular, like I'd have pain, but it's not like to my mum's, you know, degree. Yeah. So, but my nan, weirdly, she had went through her menopause in when she was in her 30s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she had, she was, all hers completely stopped. So she was like, wow, the opposite end of the scale. Yeah. Yeah. And then I luckily I was, I'm normal. But yeah.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Well, yeah, that's because it's like my mum never really suffered. My eldest sister never did. But then my middle sister, she's got endometriosis. And she, you know, but she wasn't, I don't think on a month, I think that happened when she was a bit older. Yeah. And she was put on the pill, so she then she didn't have periods at all.
Yeah. For, so that's, you know, the only sort of thing that they do do, isn't it? They
but I can't take, I've never been able to take the pill. It makes me mental. I can't have a coil. I can't, any of that stuff. I just can't.
Yeah, I had the implant in my arm, and I swear I lost my shit. I went absolutely insane. Yeah. And like to
did
the
they
point
take
that
it
I
out?
Was. Yeah, like my around the time of my period, I was basically suicidal. Like I was so, yeah, I was really, I was next level gone insane. Yeah. And my mum was like, you need to get that taken out of your arm because you've gone mad. Like there's no other way to describe it. I just absolutely lost my mind. So I went to the doctors and, you know, you're basically having like a little operation because they're cutting your skin with a scalpel and then hooking it out. And it was so funny. The nurse was like, okay, this is, we're going to numb it. We're going to put this, we're going to cut it. She was so nice. Then she yanked it out of my arm. And then I went, oh, I'm pregnant. And she went, oh, my God, don't scare me. She like dropped it on the floor. But yeah, so I mean, I only had it in for like 3 months, but it was, I went probably bananas.
But that, see, that worries me about how the fact that they can put that in young women's as well arms mostly not knowing whether or not that they're going to react really badly to it because it's not like it's a pill that you can just stop taking, like you've got to book an appointment to get go to the doctor and have it done, you know, it's like
and it's constant, you're constantly releasing hormones into your, I mean it's insane what we have to go through it but is. they developed a pill for men but they stopped it because it was giving men headaches and you're like a headache. If you knew what we have to go through, but then I wouldn't necessarily trust a man that he's like, yeah, no, I'm on the pill. I wouldn't trust him that he's taking it.
Yeah. And the thing is, it is both. And the thing is, it's always going to be more on us because we are the ones that actually have to deal with, you know, getting pregnant
absolutely.
And everything. So you can't let some, whereas men can kind of just be a bit like, they don't have to worry as much, do they?
No.
Yeah, they can just fuck off.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just, I mean, especially what's going on at the moment, you know, in America, and it's, I'm getting anxious that it's coming over here because, you know, what they said something like, just, I can't say the word, statistics, that's it. One in three abortions are medical. Like they're not just because, you know, you've got pregnant by mistake. It's actually like necessary, you know? And that really scares me that the country and even potentially our country one day will be willing to put women's lives at risk.
I don't know if we would here because I don't think that there is that massive religious factor as they, because in America they are still pretty, I don't know if they would be able to get away with it here. I'm very hopeful. Anyway, I wanted to do a couple of podcasts on abortion just for people sharing their stories. But I'm still waiting to do another one with my friend before I release them. But the whole thing with that in America, it is just about control. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They don't give a shit about people. They don't, once the baby's out, they don't give a fuck about it. So it's not about preserving life because they haven't got a free healthcare system for a start. You know, if they cared about life so much or welfare, you know, it's the white man. Is the problem, and I'm hoping, I just don't know if it could happen here. I think that there will be uproar. I don't know.
I mean, but then you look, there were like marches in the States as well, you know, pro-choice marches, and it scares me that
what did it do? Scary.
You know,
it is very scary.
And especially, you know, I mean, you know, there's that program, I don't know if you've watched it, The Handmaid's Tale. And it's like, oh my God, like it's scarily sort of going that way in America. You
I
know,
did that
it's very
at A level.
Religious.
I loved that book, and it was a bit, I remember reading it at the time, but young, you know, Marxist feminist. But now, as I'm older and the more things are happening, especially with like the way things are at the moment with the economy and stuff, like I often joke with my friends saying it's, you know, Handmaid's Tale, it's gonna happen, but it
under his
you
eye
you could totally see it happening in America. I could actually genuinely see it happening in America.
It's absolutely terrifying. It's terrifying that we live in an age where we're watching a program or reading a book and go, yeah, that could happen.
Yeah,
100%. But it's like Black Mirror as well, you know, like the Charlie Brown. We're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's scary.
I can't watch that because it makes me feel too funny. I watched like the first series, but I've not watched the most recent ones because it makes me feel so uncomfortable. I just can't.
Yeah.
I just can't.
It's not fun. Like, let's go back to RuPaul.
Yeah. I love RuPaul. Oh, that's
so good. So good. Well, my friend Gary, who I mentioned earlier, who did I did stand up with. So he's in lockdown. He sort of got into TikTok and stuff, and he started doing like makeup videos. And then now he's like a superstar on TikTok, and he's got loads of videos. And he started. He wanted to do drag, but then he realized that he's a very unattractive woman. He does not make a pretty woman. And he's really good friends with Ginzilla, who's the massive, really tall, gorgeous, ginger Australian with the big beard drag queen. And Ginzilla said, well, gender is a spectrum. So you can be anywhere on that spectrum. So you don't have to be a drag queen. Why don't you become a drag king? So Gary, it transformed himself into Silver Rocks, the drag king. And I went to his very first performance last week, and
it was
amazing. Yeah, so it was so good because he's done this he made this fuzzy worm coat out of like thousands of, you know, those fuzzy worms that you get on a piece of string that you go like that between your fingers.
Yeah,
so he's made a jacket, a coat out of fuzzy worms, and he's made a wig to go with it. And he loves that sort of 80s punk, like not punk, sort of rock, you know, with the big shoulder pads, like Kiss, you know, that sort of glam rock. So his character's like this glam rock star from the 80s. It's amazing.
Oh, wow. I'll have to check him out.
Silver Rocks on TikTok. So good.
I will. I'll look.
I'm so proud of
drag.
Him.
I just love... too. They just make me happy because, like, with the RuPaul stuff, like, they've all... Well, the majority of them have had such fucking hard lives, and the artistry... Yep. And strength and the freedom that they've got now to express themselves, it's very heartwarming, and they're so fucking funny as well. I love that.
I just wish they had drag kings on there, but it's a shame that they don't, because I mean maybe I love that they had the first trans the UK had which I love. She's doing really well. But yeah, I think, you know, it's you have to be so talented in so many different ways. Like, you have to make stuff and be funny and be quick and, like, do your makeup amazingly and sew and be creative. Like, that's not a triple threat. That's like a quadruple, like, seven different skills that you need. I couldn't do it. I could barely put makeup on in the morning.
I can't do makeup. But it did make me feel like I should make more effort. But, you know, when I think, God, some people spend hours, don't they? And I'm just like, I don't even wear mascara anymore.
No.
I just can't be bothered to take it off. That's the thing. And I don't really know what I'm doing either. And it's like...
just slap it on, it's fine.
So what have you got coming up?
I've got a gig tonight in Bracknell, Sally Bracknell, yes.
Oh, lovely.
So that'll be good. And then I've just been thinking I might apply to the Brighton Fringe, so that'll be in May next year. And then I also want to do Macfest, which is also May. Is Macfest March, Richard?
April.
So potentially I want to do Macfest because you have to apply and be like invited, and it's very sort of very exciting if you get.
Where is that?
It's at Machynlleth, which is in Wales. And
okay.
So it's Little Wonder do the events. And they also book for loads of different shows. And they do Macfest, and they also do Aberystwyth Comedy Festival.
Okay.
And you have to be, it's very prestigious, and you have to be invited. And it's just the audiences are so gorgeous. They take over this whole town in Machynlleth, and the audience are just proper comedy lovers. So you know, Rich went last year and did his show, did his show, and it was just smashed. It was so good. And the audiences just loved him. I mean, obviously. But then, you know, obviously going from that to Edinburgh, where people have just like walked past and gone, oh, what's this comedy? Like,
yeah,
it's a very different vibe. So I want to do that potentially. So yeah, now I'm just booking gigs in, you know, over Christmas and New Year, next year really.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so doing that.
Well, good luck. Let me know if you get on to Macfest, because that would be very exciting.
Yes, it'll be so exciting.
I'll share links to everything, and hopefully we'll come and see you soon. I don't get to go out much. I've had a couple of comedians on, and I'm like, I'll definitely come and see you, but I just never get a chance to bloody go out. But I will try my hardest.
That's all right. Thank you. Yeah, if I'm ever in your neck of the woods, I'll let you know.
Yes. And when I come down to Brighton as well.
Yes, let's do that.
Yes. All right. Well, say bye, but stay there so I can say bye properly. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye. Nice to see you. Bye.
So yes, that was Kate. Make sure you check her out on the socials and go and see her in a gig. I am hoping to go and see her in a gig when I can get some childcare and feel better. But that was Kate. She is lovely. So give her a follow. If you want to discuss anything that we discussed, please get in touch. If you have any guest suggestions or you yourself would like to come on, please get in touch. Hit me up. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please share the podcast. Sharing is caring. I do hope you're good and getting excited for Halloween. Halloween is my favourite of the made up holidays, and I'm very excited about it. Big love to you all. Stay safe and sane, and I will see you next week when hopefully I will sound and feel a lot better. Big love. Bye bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.